Hello, it's Stephen Carr. Welcome to the Year Full Stack podcast. It is Monday, March 23, 2026. Today, we're going to kind of dovetail off of a previous topic that we discussed before. Originally, I had released a topic, a podcast about fear. And today, I want to talk about basically self-fulfilling prophecies and how those actually come about and how those come into play and how you can kind of actually control that. Because once you kind of wrap your head around a lot of different things between cause and effect, it actually helps to kind of understand it and help break the cycle in the negative things. And in the positive ways, it helps you to kind of build a more proactive stance. So let's just start off by this. The fear in all of us is processed in our limbic system. And that can override the prefrontal cortex before conscious thoughts kick in. So think of it more or less almost like a knee-jerk reaction, right? The limbic system, especially the amygdala, is the source of fear processing. And when a threat is detected, which is what fear is tied to, right? You have a threat of something or a fear of something, you then react to that. And a lot of times that completely bypasses, unless you train yourself, which is difficult. I find myself even now, years and years of studying human behavior myself, and I still realize, oh, wow, my emotions were totally controlling that outcome or my response or whatever I said in that moment. It's kind of interesting. Hindsight's always 20/20, right? So I started to study this mainly because pattern recognition is something that I always like to study and analyze in other people and then try to apply it to myself. Hey, what am I doing here? And so I thought I would just talk about a couple of real-world examples of a self-fulfilling prophecy and how that works. So the definition of a self-fulfilling prophecy is a belief. It's true or false that changes your behavior in a way that causes that belief to become true. So some classic examples, someone believes I'm going to be abandoned. So then they become anxious, controlling, accusatory. Then their partner pulls away, and then abandonment happens. So then the person says, see, I was right. They weren't right. They caused it. And this applies equally to fear. I'm going to lose everything. Then you panic. Then you basically cause destruction. Optimism. I'm capable and trusted, which leads to calm actions and then success. There's something called a threat, you know, your threat perception that you have causes a defensive behavior loop. So fear, it activates in your amygdala. And what that does is it suppresses the prefrontal cortex, the logic, foresight, and it prioritizes immediate threat response over long-term outcomes. So think, you know, immediate action, right? Which is very helpful when you're in some sort of life or death situation. But when it's not life or death, maybe it's just relational, job stress, life stress, you can still behave the same way. So once you're in that state, your brain interprets neutral events as hostile. It can also act defensively, preemptively. It can create conflict where none exists. And in fact, you know, one of the things they say, it's kind of ties into it, but depression and stuff typically happens when you just sit around and ruminate. The reason for that is because your mind just goes in loops and all you think about is worst case scenarios. The reason our brain thinks of worst case scenarios is again, because it's trying to protect and defend itself. If I imagine the worst case scenario, then I prepare for that. Defend for that. I rehearse the negative scenario, then I can be protected. Well, then what that does is you're literally continually thinking about negative things. You're only thinking about, you know, the worst case that can possibly happen. One of the best things I was told years back, they said, what you're doing is called fortune telling. And if you're going to fortune tell in a negative way, go ahead and fortune tell in a positive way too, right? Some people will say, hey, worst case scenario of this is XYZ, so I'm going to behave this way. Well, what if the best case scenario is actually what happens, not the worst? Are you planning for that as well? Are you acting in accordance with that? So basically, back to the whole where you create conflict where none exists and all that stuff. People then typically, they act out of fear, and then they point to the fallout as evidence that the threat was real, right? Because you have a fear. I fear something's going to happen, some threat, some bad thing, you know, relationship loss, job loss, anything. So then you act in that way. Those actions, what you do based on that fear is typically what brings about that outcome. And then you point to that outcome and say, see, all along, I was right. And so this is not, belief, then magic, then outcome. What it is, it's belief that causes behavioral distortion and then the outcome results. So another example is confirmation bias, right? Someone basically fears an outcome, so they selectively notice evidence that supports that fear. They ignore evidence that contradicts it, and then they retell the story in ways that reinforce it. This is intentional narrative tightening over time, and this is why validation from others feels good temporarily, but reality keeps contradicting the story. Cognitive dissonance increases instead of resolves. So what is that, right? Cognitive dissonance, it's when basically behaviors and thoughts don't line up, or reality that you could be telling yourself or whatever in your head doesn't line up with reality of lived life. This is actually really, really common, and you can see it in children. People will try to tell children stories, you know? This happened because of that. The divorce happened because of this. But the children, they don't feel stories. Stories are a way that we try to convince the mind. But they are very, they're very sensitive to feelings, and that's why children, it's more just instinctive. No, that you can tell them whatever story you want, but if they don't feel safe, they don't feel safe. That's why people can stories and stuff like that only work on adults. You know, if you tell an adult a story, right? People typically don't want to get into the minutiae of any sort of relationship breakdown or any issue or any story. So they're just going to be positive. And typically people aren't going to tell you a story unless they somehow believe that you're their friend or whatever. So then you tell someone the story, but you kind of, you know, it's mostly true, but maybe you leave out the bad parts you did. Or maybe you leave out, you know, a couple of key details, right? Because at the end of the day, no matter what happens, especially in relationships, it takes two to tango. Exceptionally rare, if not impossible, for only one person to actually be the problem, right? So that's one thing you can kind of point out. If someone never takes any sort of responsibility or accountability for their part in any sort of a scenario or story they're telling you, right away, you know you're not probably getting the full story, okay? We're talking bell curve here, right? There might be a scenario where you're like, I was 100% wronged, you know, and I did nothing, but that's almost never the case. That's almost never the case. So let's move on. Let's talk to control collapse. So this is when someone fears losing control, right? Everybody needs to feel autonomous in some ways, that they have agency, that they control their life in some way. Nobody loves to feel out of control. So when someone fears losing control, they often escalate control attempts, they overreach, they violate boundaries, they act irrationally. And ironically, this is what accelerates the loss of control. And this is why fear-driven people often create the chaos they claim to be escaping, or they push away the people they want reassurance from, or they destroy stability while trying to preserve it. Another example is a positive belief, why it sometimes works. You know, you think it and it happens. The crowd oversimplifies, but here's a grounded mechanism here. So if you're believing that you're competent, I'm safe, I can handle outcomes, that actually then leads to calmer behavior, better decision-making, stronger social signals, and improved outcomes. And again, it's behavior that mediates reality, not magic. And the key insight from what you can tell from all of this is that fear doesn't predict the future, fear rehearses it, then forces it into existence through action. So that's why wisdom and many traditions say, just like it says in the Bible 365 times, do not fear so often. Not even so much morally, but functionally. Fear makes people stupid. It makes people reactive, and it makes them destructive. So basically, people can kind of go through these scenarios, and as you hear them and listen to them, you're kind of like, okay, I can kind of identify from some of that stuff. And so I jotted down a few real-world examples as well, because sometimes it just helps, right? I'm really practical. So a couple of examples here. You say, my boss is looking to fire me. So then you become guarded. You stop contributing. You avoid visibility. Performance drops. You look disengaged. And you actually get put on the chopping block. So your fear caused action, and then it brought it about. Another fear, let's say people are like, hey, people don't like me. So then you act cold. You act withdrawn. You don't initiate. Others mirror that distance. Social rejection then becomes real. Another example, you could tell yourself, I'm bad with money anyway. So then you don't track your spending. You make impulsive purchases. Your finances deteriorate, and that reinforces your identity of being bad with money. Another example, you can say, my partner is probably cheating. So you start checking their phone, interrogating, acting insecure. The partner feels distrusted, pulls away, and hides things. The relationship degrades, sometimes leading to actual cheating or exit. Another example, this deal will not close. So then you have low energy on calls. You don't follow up strongly. The client senses uncertainty. The deal dies. And that's kind of like, you know, all of these examples here, just real world things that I'm trying to think of, but it happens in all of our lives, you know, and there's even some positive things, right? Let's also reinforce here that a lot of these fears, people would say, hey, I have this fear, so I'm going to act in a way to try to preserve or fix something or keep something safe. You know, I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose this deal or this relationship. So then you act, you know, overprotective, or maybe you overshare. There's a lot of things that'll happen. I've done a lot myself. Some other examples, you avoid hard conversations. So then the issues compound, and then they blow up later, and it's worse than the original problem. If you try to, say, over-control your kids, then they start hiding things. Then they become sneaky, and then you lose actual visibility and influence. If you're procrastinating on a project, so then you're rushed, you have low quality output, which equals poor results and a reputation hit. Reacting emotionally in conflict, then, you know, you have escalation instead of resolution, and then there's long-term relationship damage. And if you cut corners at work, you have short-term gain, but long-term trust erosion when it's discovered. So one thing I want to talk about here too is this. Self-fulfilling prophecy, it's not always negative, okay? It's how you use it. And again, a lot of these things, we're just not aware. So we're going to now talk about some positive things. So some positive beliefs that then yield behaviors and then outcomes. So one is you have the belief, I can figure this out, which then helps you stay calm. You problem solve, you persist, you eventually find a solution, and that reinforces competence. This is actually one thing that I like to do, and I've tried to train all three of my children that I've had. Over the years, I always would point to their previous success, because everybody has success in their life. Nobody is 100% a failure. So I point to previous success, and I would say, well, you didn't learn to ride your bike the first time, so don't give up after the first few tries. And I even tell them the pattern. Hey, it took you a lot of tries, then you figured it out, you got it. So I make it very, very normal to continue to try, to continue to persevere, to fail and not discount anything and just, you know, think that you're a loser. So another example, people generally like me. If you believe that, then you would be open, you'd be warm, you would initiate conversations, others would respond positively, social success then compounds. Another example, I am in control of my finances. So then you would act, such as tracking spending, you'd make deliberate choices, your money would improve, and your identity then strengthens. If you tell yourself you handle pressure well, then you stay composed under stress. You make better decisions than others, and then you earn trust and leadership roles. And then if you tell yourself, this will work if I execute, then that causes you to have high follow-up, strong communication, persistence. That increases the odds of your success dramatically, and then you win more often. So the whole thing is that fear primes bad behavior, not just bad feelings. Confidence primes effective behavior, not just optimism. So the world, it doesn't bend to belief, but it's shaped by belief that bends outcomes, you know? Belief then bends your outcomes. So that's the thing. It's all tied together, and you can see the loop. I kind of wrote this out on a paper, and I drew a circular wheel because there were so many different times that I would interact in the past with a particular person, and they had this fear. Then they would act on this fear. Their actions from that fear caused the other person to pull away. They would point to the pulling away as proof all along they were right. So there's a lot of ways to break the cycle, but it's really good sometimes just to sit here and point it out. But it's, again, it's easy to think about all of these things when you're calm, when you're not in a fear state, when you're not in fight or flight mode. The most difficult thing is to put this into practice when you are in a heightened emotional state. And this, again, the heightened emotional state can also be positive, you know? You can be happy, ecstatic, you know, and then maybe you act in a way, again, that causes outcomes that you may not want. So I hope today's podcast was good for you. Again, I'm Stephen Carr. Have a great week.